And so I went and I changed the price. I went to Kinko's at the time and changed the prices, put them up to $2,500 instead of $750, and we sold out.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Now, here's the fun thing. At the time, in Vietnam, landed, the ships cost $85. Lunch with Lou. Lunch with Lou. Lunch with Lou. Hey everyone, this is Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. Today, we are discussing diversification within the supply chain. What are some of the top countries for manufacturing? How do you find the factories outside of China? And how long does it take to transition outside of your current supply chain? Welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. Okay, today we are discussing diversification within the supply chain. And our guest is a returning guest and an awesome guy. He's the co-founder of Gimba and Pride Bites Pet Products. He's an expert in product development and supply chain strategy. And over his career, he has owned and operated businesses that have designed, manufactured, and sold millions of consumer products from all over the world. And I am talking about Steven Bluestein. So we'll be with him in a second. But first, let's have a word from our sponsor.
Facing cash flow challenges.
Well, maybe I won't do a read.
Oh, you want to do the read?
Yes, we can do a read. Okay, we did not discuss this beforehand. All right, let's do seller basics. Hey, Amazon sellers, ever faced with suspensions, ASIN hiccups, or IP headaches? Introducing Seller Basics, your Amazon account's guardian. With just $99 a month or code NORM $89 a month, Seller Basics offers a dedicated team to shield your business from these challenges. Plus, this membership offers free legal consultations from seasoned e-commerce attorneys. And guess what? No long-term contracts, and you can cancel with just a month's notice. View Seller Basics as your Amazon account's health plan, and you can check them out at sellerbasics.com. All right, now for those nasty disclaimers. Seller Basics isn't an insurer or law firm. Consultations come from independent firms. Results may vary, and membership is needed before events leading to the claims. And, of course, terms apply. All right, let's bring in Kelsey. And sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and welcome my buddy, Steven.
Orm, what's up, man?
How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I was just freezing my butt off in the snow yesterday. Now it's decided that it's going to be like 1 degree above freezing. So that's Celsius. And now the snow is melting a little bit. I can't even go for a cigar.
Oh, man. That's really a bad life. I definitely hear that.
Yeah. You living in Austin, right?
I was going to say, I haven't thought about snow or cold weather in a month.
So, and your cold weather.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. I have to turn up my air conditioning here.
Like. Yeah, I pity you. Oh, my. Yeah, I'll just take the knife out of my back right now.
Exactly.
So one of the things we talked about the first time you came on, you had a product and you went in front of the Shark Tank guys, right?
Yes. Yeah. So actually this April 8th. Is my 8th year anniversary for Shark Tank. So we're dating myself now.
So I know we talked about it, but this is so cool. What was it like going up against the sharks?
You know, it was really, I still get goosebumps about it because I think it's just such an, you know, I have so much appreciation for it. And I was talking to somebody this week who asked me for help to get on the show and kind of going through with them all their pitch practices, that brings me back there. But it's just such an awesome experience. And, following that, I think you just get like instant validation. So, you know, going through that moment and all that we practiced and tried to get on and going through it is just really awesome.
Oh, Kelsey's even got the YouTube.
Nice.
Kelsey, maybe we can have a little snippet of the YouTube. Maybe we can put it on the shared screen here a little bit later on if we can, if you can do it. Just waiting for that shake of the head.
Yeah, we can do it. We could I'll pull it.
All right, very awesome. Cool. Bring back some memories.
Yes.
Also, when you went on the show, so that was 8 years ago, was it immediate reaction? Did you get tons of information? Did people start calling you off the hook? Did you get lots of orders? What was going on?
Yeah. You know, I'll kind of take you through from the filming side of things, which was like super interesting. We filmed in June. So coming up on the groups that are going to go out to LA this coming June would be the same as what we did. And, you know, we practice a whole bunch. I always tell people is that you go and you pitch the executive producers first, and then you go and you pitch the sharks the next day. And when you pitch the EPs, they really are trying to slot you in the order for which you're going to go pitch the sharks the next day.
Right.
That actually has a ton of strategy right there within that process, because the sharks after lunch are kind of mean, you know, they're hungry or they're tired, you know, like before, at least they have empty stomachs. So they have something to look forward to. So they're still kind of with you during the day. So I think that's like a little bit of advice for anybody that's going in the tank. Just make sure you really practice hard for those EPs, because it really slots you well in that day. And then after we filmed, you know, it was like you have amazing excitement. And then within an hour, I'm back on like my friend's couch, you know, and I'm like, can't talk about it to anybody. And then about like 10 months, I think it was, where we didn't hear anything. And this was before you had like open reads on emails. So like we were using this thing called Banana Tag, which was really a really bad way of tracking emails and opens. And you would just see like a cluster of emails from Shark Tank get opened at a time. So we'd get all excited, you know, but you'd have no information. So it was like, I think about 10 months, we had about $3,000 left in our bank account. I was waiting in line to go to South by Southwest was in Austin. I was with my now wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. And I was sitting in line. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have to tell everybody to go home on Monday. I don't even have enough money to make payroll. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I got the letter from Shark Tank. Email as I was sitting in line. It was 10 months after I filmed with no communication at all, and said, I'm going to be on Shark Tank in 3 weeks. And wow. We raised $1 million in 72 hours and kept the lights on. Wow. And sort of the rest is history on that story. But first,
who went in with you?
It was Lori and Robert were our two sharks.
Oh, very good.
And they the first weekend we did 500K in sales.
Wow. That's crazy. Oh. All right. So if you're watching the video, this is cool. So this is Steven on Shark Tank coming in to the tank. All right. Let's see. Oh, we got no audio, right? Okay. So This is pretty cool, but we don't have any audio, Kels. So I think
okay, there's no audio playing. Okay, I'll double check this.
Yeah. All right. So we'll continue here. If we can get the audio going, we'll play it for you. All right. Now let's talk about diversification within the supply chain. So what are some of the biggest issues that you're seeing with this right now?
You know, I think the biggest issue, honestly, is just fear. In fear of the unknown, really. I mean, this is striking the quadrant that all of us think about all the time, that unknown of the unknown. And I think more or less than anything that I keep getting on these calls with Walmart folks or, you know, different people from Amazon. And they're saying that the biggest risk that they see is a political risk, given that some people are talking about increasing tariffs to 60%.
100.
If elected, right? So yeah. I think, you know, it's a scary place. And right now we're fielding just a lot of incoming calls from people saying, what do I do? You know, I've been in this supply chain for so long. I love these factories that I work with. I have great relationships. You know, now what?
So that's pretty scary, that fear of the unknown. So the way that you're doing it right now, are you continuing to work with the manufacturer and then trying to find a second or third person that you could or a company that you could work with outside of China?
Yeah, and it all depends on what your product is, and it really kind of maps out what you're going to do based on the product. But, you know, I literally learned Chinese to, you know, do business in China. So I'm not trying to run from China tomorrow, you know, but I want to make sure that You know, if in fact I don't have business interruption. So, you know, it's kind of walking the lines, making sure that you can start sending orders to a different supply chain, testing that out, making sure qualities and things kind of align while maintaining your relationships, because those are really, really important. And quite frankly, you probably can get better economics within your current supply chain too, with just some discussion points.
Yeah, I take a look at, even with the 25% Trump tariff, it's done a lot for people to go outside of China, to India, to Vietnam, even though probably most of the Vietnamese owners are Chinese, most likely.
Yes. And
that's not a bad thing, because the Chinese have a process down, right? A lot of these countries, they're just trying to catch up, and they don't have that same culture as the Chinese do when it comes to business. But I'll give you an example that one of the clients we were working with, they were doing cosmetics and beauty supplies out of China, which, you know, I said in my the WhatsApp group, which caused a little bit of controversy, but I'd never buy that from China ever. You know, it's just it's that product fade. And that scares the hell out of me. And that's just a normal part of it when you're dealing with China. But I don't want to have that happen with cosmetics or with beauty supplies. So, I mean, that's just my opinion. But they went over to Korea. Now, Korea is known for high-end quality products. And it was affordable now because they didn't have that 25% Trump tariff. So you got to keep your eyes open. And one other thing. When you're paying $27,000 for a container, which happened back in 2020 from China, but not from the other countries, that would have been another way to easily just pick up while this was going on and just go over to your secondary supplier. So I think it's always good to have somebody in your back pocket.
Yeah, that was a scary time. I mean, the $27,000 containers, I mean, it was like, when is this going to end? You know, how long can I put up with this type of thing? And which was interesting because so many people without really any knowledge thought, I'm going to go to Mexico. I'm going to go make all my products in Mexico. I'm going to start down this journey. And it sounded great. It like sounded amazing. Okay, let's go to the closest supply chain that we can find. But it'll have to, you know, the kind of the telling story behind that is that the infrastructure must be there. The factory owners who are connected in this network must be ready, right? And the supply chains, if they're still coming from the East, it doesn't really matter, right? Like if there's some business interruption, they're going to cause the interruption down the supply chain. So it was definitely very interesting. We still field a lot of, you know, Mexico questions, and we have a good amount of projects in Mexico right now. So it does work, and there are solutions, but I think the one stop fits all solution is not really there, I think, in that part of the world yet. So definitely interesting what $27,000 tariffs does to you, or $27,000 containers does to you.
Yeah. It makes you think, you know?
100%.
So let's talk a little bit about some other countries that you could recommend it, and maybe some of the cultural differences you can expect there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you definitely noted the first one, which is Vietnam, right? And I think majority of those, when I go to Vietnam, I speak Chinese because majority of my factory owners have opened some sort of satellite or have a continuation of production line in Vietnam now.
So I wasn't making it up.
No, 100%. Yeah, that's for real. Which offer, you know, can offer some big advantages, you know, to our team in China. What we suggested is, hey, like, we want you to find the pockets of factories in China who are now going to Cambodia, who are now going to Vietnam, because those are relationships that they understand what it's like now to work with more than one supply chain and can help you faster, easier in those situations. So Vietnam, a lot of people are looking there first. The one caveat about Vietnam is you typically need to have a little bit larger production cycles. So minimum orders are a little bit larger. Overall timing, it takes a little bit longer. So just have to be ready in terms of your supply chain to fit it within theirs, given the different constraints.
Yeah, I remember this goes back 20 years ago, and I was there and I was just checking out furniture to bring back, because if you don't know Vietnam, the furniture that comes out of there is unbelievable. Yes. And at the time it was super cheap to bring over. So I went over there to do that. But one of the, I guess the general manager said, oh, you want to take a look in the back room? And there was a bunch of people making wooden ships and tall ships. And I knew the Miami boat show was coming up. Oh. And I said, oh, I'll take a container, a 20-foot container, and just shipped it over to Miami. So me and my buddy, I went to the Miami boat show, and the first day, nothing happened. The second day, nothing happened. Didn't sell a single tall ship. The third day, at the end of the second day, somebody came over and said, what's wrong with your ships? And I'm going, what do you mean? They said there was another seller down this other aisle, and they were selling their ships for $3,500, and we were at $750. So they thought something was wrong. And so I went and I changed the price. I went to Kinko's at the time and changed the prices, put them up to $2,500 instead of $750, and we sold out.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Now, here's the fun thing. At the time, in Vietnam, landed, the ships cost $85.
Wow.
Yeah, it was one of the biggest successes I've ever had. It lasted for 3 shows before other people caught on.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, listen, I give you a lot of credit, even listening at the beginning of you talking about your new podcast with Kevin, right? Like, you know, you jumping first to market, jumping first at things, and then being able to be flexible enough to change in the middle, given what's out there, right? Seeing the competition, how they're falling, and how you can adjust it. And you sold those products, you made huge gain, right? So I think that's a tribute to you and your style. I think that, you know, something that I've always been interested in is how you kind of first mover to market. But and I think that's a huge win. I mean, specifically now with Vietnam, I think, yeah, if you're in furniture, I would 100% looking at Vietnam. We have an amazing brand we produce for called Outmore Living. They're doing heated furniture, outside heated furniture. Mm. So maybe something for you in the 1 degree Celsius weather that could make you smoke cigars. So
tell them to contact me.
Exactly. You know, and we looked at a lot of places, and Vietnam's such a good fit for them. Our manager in Vietnam came from Lovesac, which is a really huge success story in consumer products. And, you know, those furniture is definitely a great place to do it in Vietnam.
All right. Now, outside of Vietnam, I know we have a good friend, Lakish. He has the Indian sourcing trip that he does. But India is another area that I'm getting more and more impressed with what they're being able to come up with. Now, they were trailing in the business culture, I found, from what I've heard from different people. It wasn't quite as fast as the Chinese culture to, you know, get the product in and out, but it is growing rapidly. So have you done any experimenting with India or any other countries in that region?
Yeah, and you know, what's really amazing is I took my first trip to India last year around January. And leaving there, my thought process was, hey, like, this is great, but infrastructure is still not here yet. And we're still a little bit a ways. I feel like it went exponentially from literally 1 year time to the following January. And I think now there's really quite a bit of options for consumer products. There was always a lot of stuff for commercial products. But I think now the factories are really starting to understand the consumer product relationship. And so we are seeing a ton of diversification right now from China to India, where maybe not people are moving all of their production, but they're starting with a quarter of it, moving a half of it. In some cases, people, because of tariffs that just came through May 1st, have moved. We have a customer that moved $25 million of the production literally overnight. So, you know, I think it's not for everybody still. Again, I caveat that, but yeah, there's a lot more. It's I definitely think it's something, if you're not looking in Vietnam or you're not looking in Cambodia, India is definitely something to start considering. And the factories, I think, are that business sense that you're talking about and being able to do the right thing as far as not charge a bunch for samples and not, you know, not extend huge terms, right? Like, I think all the things that we thought that China did so well at the beginning, India is starting to take part of. So it's starting to look a lot better in that 1 year that I've seen it and really start excelling. So we think India is a huge opportunity. So I think the gentleman you mentioned, you know, going on those trips is definitely a good opportunity.
So this is something I do want to point out to somebody. So I'm not making anything off of this, but if you're interested, I could go back to Lakesh, and he told me that, and this was supposed to happen last year. And I know, Brian, if you're listening, you wanted to come on it, but he called me up and he said that he would offer our group, if we were interested, a trip to India. Now get this, tell me if this is good. A flight for $1,000, he would fly you over, put you in 5-star hotel, feed you, and bring the manufacturers, like have a show for you for a week for $1,000. And I think he said at the time, if I could get 10 people to come over, he would get the different manufacturers to come together. So if anybody's interested, you know, let me know in the group. And if we can get a few people, I know there was two or three people that were interested, and we just, it wasn't a major thing we were trying to do last year. But if you are interested, I'd either get you in touch with Lakesh, or we would just put something together for you. But $1,000, not a bad deal.
Not a bad deal. Yeah, I would love to connect with Lakesh. I think, you know, we're constantly bringing people over there, and our goal is just for people to learn more about India. I think it's a tremendous opportunity. And personally, I even have 50% of my personal supply chain in India as well. So I've really enjoyed the factories that I'm working with, and it seems like they're very opportunistic. So definitely something to consider.
All right. So I will introduce you to him. He's an awesome person.
Awesome.
Any other countries, any new countries that people aren't talking about right now?
Yeah, the one that I'm watching the most, really, besides the African countries, it's really interesting to me to see what's going to happen there. But yeah. I think China's spending kind of the same amount of effort that people are going into Vietnam and they're going into Africa. But I think another area that we're seeing a lot is Colombia. Colombia is really starting to emerge as good consumer products for soft goods, really good alternative fabrics. We've seen a lot of stuff within the pineapple threading and some of this coconut threading, some of these definitely foreign materials that we don't quite see in China that often. We're seeing a lot more now in Colombia. So I'm really excited about that. I think Nicaragua also provides another area to watch out for. Some of these coastal regions, Caribbean regions, Central and South American regions that I think are super interesting outside of Mexico. So Colombia is definitely starting to emerge, and spending some money to get people to come down to go to their trade shows and to meet their factories. So definitely very interesting opportunity there.
Yeah. In Colombia, I don't know if you got to meet them. I know Kevin did. So I met this father and son that was out of Colombia that was doing EVA. So our family did a ton of EVA out of China, tons. And, I know a lot about EVA and the quality of EVA foam. So I got talking with them, and these guys were they were at the right price and the same quality. And it was coming out of Colombia, not China, which really surprised me.
Yeah, I see really aggressive pricing. We see it pretty comparable to the situation. We see lower MOQs, which I like a lot out of those areas. And then honestly, I think it's about speed to production. So, you know, something that you can't take away from China is you could go to them and have an idea on a Friday and you could start production on a Monday, right? Maybe even on Saturday if you wanted to, depending on how aggressive they are. But in Colombia, you're starting to see something a bit similar to that, whereas you can go there, you can give an idea, and then the next week you could be in production, which is pretty cool, given that they're so vertically integrated. So definitely something to watch out for if you're looking for something in the South America environment.
All right. Okay. We're already at the bottom of the hour. So we are at the bottom of the hour. If this is the first time you're listening to the podcast, we have a giveaway called the Wheel of Kelsey, and that happens at the top of the hour. If you're interested in joining the giveaway, it's hashtag Wheel of Kelsey. Tag two people and you'll get a second entry. As you can already see in the comments, a few people have already started. Stephen, what do we have today?
Yeah, so we're giving away a free product market research report from Gemba. And what's unique about these is it's not kind of your standard Helium 10 report. What we do is kind of infuse more product design within the report. So there's more call outs to product specific rather than just the data research. So so if you win the Wheel of Kelsey, you get yourself a free product research report.
All right. Fantastic. So hashtag Wheel of Kelsey, tag two people. You get a second entry. Now I'm going to talk about start, scale, exit, repeat. So anybody who's listening to the podcast probably knows this book, Start, Scale, Exit, Repeat by Colin Campbell. He breaks down his process, his winning formula of building companies with start, scale, exit, and repeat. He breaks it into four different modules, which, just let me go to the chapters. It's pretty cool. You start with a story, you go to people, you expand to money, and then to systems. And he does that within each one of the modules, start, scale, exit, repeat. So within that, he's got subcategories that you could always refer to. And also he's interviewed about 200 successful people in the book. So I found it very helpful. I've read it. I think it came out probably 6 months ago, maybe. And he ended up number one in about 15 different categories on Amazon. So it's published by Forbes. You can go to Amazon and you can check it out. Hard copy, soft copy, Kindle. And it's also available on Audible. All right. So now let's get back to this. Are you finding any more manufacturing happening here in North America? North America, yeah, Mexico, U.S. and Canada?
You know, I'm starting, I see a lot of prototyping stuff. So when we're talking about manufacturing, I guess the dependency is about scale and quantity, right? But, I see more injection folks popping up now in the Colorado areas that I hadn't seen before, and more cut and sew happening now on the East Coast lines. We even have some outside of Austin and Waco, Texas, that we see some independent people that we do some work with. So I think more is emerging. I think the idea that it was going to be this like grand sweeping thing that we were bringing, manufacturing back to America, haven't seen it in that realm, but certainly like if we can produce in Canada or produce in US or Mexico, we certainly like to do that. So we always make the effort, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah. And I found like certain categories, a lot of beauty products, supplements. Yeah. In fact, Kevin was talking about this. We were both into Bully Sticks. I got mine in Des Moines.
Okay.
Des Moines, Iowa. Cool. And he got his, I believe it was in Canada.
Okay.
And he got his was actually a French trained chef.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Was kind of funny. But there's some really great products that you can get manufactured right here in North America. I'm going to give you another example. So I can't tell you the product, but it was a wooden product that athletes were using, a very popular product. And Afolabi took a look at it.
Okay.
And he said, why don't we try it over in North America? The person says, I don't know. It's going to cost a lot more. Well, they were doing it manually in China. He got it done robotically, and it ended up being cheaper. But then he took a look at the material. And he said, well, we could either put this into a resin or even aluminum. And he brought down the cost by about 70%. Wow. Just by changing the materials.
Wow.
And so that's another option too. So don't discount North America because, you're doing it a certain way. You have to check out the different types of material, but also you could do a redesign too. We're always talking about product innovation. So take a look at that product. If you've got a hot seller, you might want to see where you can save some money, and it might be surprising enough right here in North America.
Yeah, I think beauty, I mean, I think all things that are formulas, right? Like anything formula related is fantastic here for sure. Compound related is fantastic here. Yeah, I have a, if you're still in the bully market, I have a great veteran. I just came back from the pet trade show, and I have a great veteran who's in California that's been doing them in California for a long time. He's awesome. So I think there's a lot of consumables, a lot of compounds. Definitely they're still there. Afolapi is probably one of the most resourceful people I've ever met. So I think I don't doubt that he found the best material to do it. So it sounds right up his alley.
Well, another thing that probably we started talking about fear at the beginning, mm-hmm. but I think another fear is the fear of transition. Yeah. So is there a time period that you think you can transition out? I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't stop using my manufacturer until I found another manufacturer. But if you are transitioning out of using that company, how long does that usually take?
You know, I recommend a phase out, because I think it's important to make sure that all your ducks in a line, exactly what you're describing right now. You know, oftentimes during Chinese New Year is a great time to test it, because the mm-hmm. factories are closed down anyway. So you're going to have a really big December, you know, work through all your orders, and then, you know, can you start testing thing in that lull period? That's the January, February area that you typically don't get a lot of orders in, to kind of feel that out. So I think the transition is what keeps people stuck to some degree, is they don't know how to transition it. And they think you have to do it all at one time. I think the best thing to do is make sure you communicate with all parties what's going on and why it's happening, and be very transparent in that sense. And if you're able to do that out of respect, I think it's important not only from your relationships, but I think economically it'll put you in a pretty good position, because you'll be able to start testing out new supply chain B while also working on the economics of supply chain A, right? Maybe they lower it 25% because they don't want to lose your business, right? So right there, then immediately you're in a different ballpark than you were before. So there's a lot that can happen with the idea of transition. That could ultimately help you, right? It's like going to remodel my house and I start seeing other houses pop up that I could just buy, you know, and then you're like, oh man, I don't know what to do, right? So I think it's kind of like in that same vein. It's, you know, slowly start transitioning, test the supply chain, make sure they understand what they need to do in order to get in a good place for you, while also just discussing it and being transparent with your current supply chain.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like to buy. I just squat.
Fair enough.
A lot cheaper for me. So I see that there's no questions yet, and I'm sure anybody who's listening right now has had the thought of, if they're in China, what can you do to at least have an option outside of China? Give us your questions. Like, you're talking to an expert. Steven is an expert. So what is, you know, what do you have? What are some questions that you might want to throw at him while he's here? And don't worry, there's no silly questions. I mean, if it's on your mind, I can guarantee you somebody else is thinking the same question. So let us know. And now let's talk about, and we touched on it, but the logistics. Every country is different. So how do logistics compare in the various countries?
Yeah, I mean, I think to get an experience like logistics in China and how systematic and on point it is, and how many options, how many freight lines, it's hard to even compete with something like that or understand that. In the other parts of the world, it obviously moves a little slower. I think the biggest difference is customs. Just be prepared on your first couple shipments to really understand what customs is going to be like. And, you know, once you start getting a couple orders out, and then it's consistent, you'll have that experience. But that's the biggest thing that I've learned so far, is customs is just so different in every location. And what things do you need to report on? What things do you need to bring to the table other than just your typical BOL, you know, like to get out? But what other approvals do you need in order to get through customs is what I would check on.
All right. Very good. All right. Let's go to, I think this is the last question I have for you. And then I see Tony. Thank you, Tony, for the question. We'll get to it in a second. this is so bloody important. And we talk about this a lot in China. It's called product fade. And if it hasn't happened, I guarantee it's not if, it's when. So unless you protect yourself. So here's the question. How do you ensure that the quality is consistent when you produce the same product in two different countries?
Yeah, it's a lot about the details and the data, right? So typically when you work with one factory, especially when I started, I didn't really think about the details and the type of fabric I was using. If it was long-haired fleece, it was okay with me. Mm-hmm. However, today I'm very, very detailed within how thick I'm using, what kind of GSM I'm using, what kind of packaging I'm using. And I have all that very detailed out and specific. And so what I do is I make sure my teams and my supply chain teams that are in China are coordinating actually with my new supply chains to make sure that the fabric quality is literally the exact same standard as they're experiencing in China. So not only do we ship samples over and we test the samples and we look at them next to each other, we also use all the data within the numbers, the type of fleeces, the thickness, et cetera, yard counts, in order to ensure that the product is going to be the same. And then when we do start production and we're producing in both places, we are matching back and forth. So we have a set that's sent from China to India and India to China to ensure that both sides can see the same quality comparison throughout the steps of the process. So if you can break up your production in steps, it's always, always warranted. And I think in terms of getting those parts broken out and then over to your other supply chain, it will take a little bit longer, but you'll ensure that the quality is much better. And then finally, you know, we do QCs before anything leaves our factory. Not only the factories do them, but our teams do them for our brands. And I think that's really, really important that you get a functional test done that just says like, hey, this is somebody else that came in who doesn't know your product, who's taking a look at it. Does it compare? Like, I know what you think, but you got to meet your sales target. So what does this guy think that has no, you know, dependency on your brand or your product line? So I think that I would suggest that as well.
Just had to stop coughing there for a sec. No problem. But yeah, that's 100%. So, you know, an inspection agency, very inexpensive, best couple $100 you could spend. Mm-hmm. And also the signed off spec sample. So if you've agreed on it and you've signed off and they've signed off, then you know exactly what it is. But even when you're on it, so I think I'm pretty good with this. But one time, and there's probably a couple times, but we let it slip. And we ended up, I think you know that we manufacture PPE products, but, you know, screen wipes as well. And but this is way before COVID, and this is way before we owned a factory. The company that we had in Taiwan sourcing for us went out. It was consistent, and we were doing tons of containers coming into North America all the time, and we let our guard down. We go over, and we open up these containers, and just liquid started pouring out. Ooh. And everything was done. And what happened was Freddie the broker, Freddie the broker decided that the piece of the sealant, he was going to cheapen it. And it was just a little bit thinner and a little bit less quality. And it killed everything.
Yep.
Yeah. So product fade can happen at any time. So just be on it. Be aware of it. Okay. So let's see. We got one question from Tony, Mr. Seger.
All right.
Wonder where he is today. Is he in Bali? Is he over here in Toronto?
So let's see, Tony, how is the best way to be transparent with your current supplier if you're planning to cut the production and they will lose business?
Yeah, it's always a challenge when you're pulling business from one factory to the other, especially also when there's mold involved.
Oh yeah.
That becomes even a harder play. So that's why I suggest is really watch your percentages. So watch your percentages that you're moving at one time, because if you move too much at one time, you're going to send a signal, right? If you move a little bit to test at the time, you're just going to test your supply chain, right? Also, using and leveraging new products. So, you know, your current factory is really good at developing new products for you. Start some new products with them. If you then reduce some of your current production and move it over, they have other bigger things that they're working on at the beginning. And so some of it could help you transition your supply chain or start having those conversations because you still have work there. I mean, ultimately, business is business and you're going to have to make a decision at one point. But that other supply chain should be ready at that point for you to be able to have confidence that you can go through with some of these tougher decisions because you have something in place and you didn't just rush into it, that you eased it along and you got it ready so that in the event that they don't want it, they don't have to have it. However, business is business. So I imagine they still want your orders if you're going to be providing some orders at all. So I would never try to close the door on your existing because what if something else happens and you're having to trade back over? So having two supply chains is only going to better your relationships and your business overall, while at the beginning, maybe being a little bit trying, you know, just try that to kind of ease into it while also adding some other R&D things.
Yeah, very good. When you were talking about molds, I laughed because, and I shouldn't have laughed, I should have cried. But I'm wondering if you could give me some advice here, because Afolabi and I had a really great client. They needed to swap out their, and this was China to China, molds. And all of a sudden, well, it happened twice. They couldn't find our molds.
Okay.
Okay. And then the other time it happened, it was they refused to hand over the molds. Yep. Now we had it in writing. We had it in a contract that we own the molds, but we could not get them out of the facility. And the other one just, we couldn't find them. How do you handle that?
Yeah, it's interesting. We had, I don't know if you remember the 101 Commerce, kind of first aggregator to hit the market, but we did a ton of work for them. And I remember them calling me one night saying like, they bought this business and it has some molds and the factory is not letting the molds out. What do you do? First thing we did was we send a team there, right? So This is not just me in the United States standing here, me in Canada standing here through the computer. This is my team on the ground in your factory right now. And we're not kidding around, right? This is something real. So we want to check the mold. We want to make sure that this mold is in good standing before we move it. If in fact there's something happens where, they do something harmful to your mold, in which case we've seen before people breaking inside of the mold so they can no longer use the mold. That's when it's time to get law enforcement involved. And
guarantee you,
they don't.
Factory owners don't expect it and they don't, want it.
No, they do not want anything filed anywhere from their factory with anything police oriented. So lawyers can help, but they know the law process is a long cycle. So oftentimes they can move money around or they can do different things in order to kind of play against that. Using a network, in terms of Gemba, we always say too, is like, we give these factories a lot of orders that are not just your order. So they want our business and they don't want to mess around where they lose a potential big windfall. So losing one mold over 10 molds is a big difference, right? So, the situation that happened with you where they can't find it or something, we always try to mark serial numbers. And then we regularly check it. So if we're in production and a quarter goes by, we say, please take a picture of our mold next to serial number X, and we keep it on file. So if you're just doing it, if you're in consistent production and that's happening to you, maybe a good idea just to add that to your SOP, your standard operating procedure, to just go ahead and make sure that the factory understands that that is your mold. If they do it on a continuous basis, they will definitely get that. But
And they weren't cheap, by the way. We're talking $30,000 plus molds.
Oh, man.
And when they all of a sudden go missing, last thing you want to do is have to fork that out again. But Steve Simonson was on Misfits, on Marketing Misfits. He was one of our first guests. And he was talking about that. It's just, they definitely don't want to go to court.
No.
So that's a very smart move. Just making sure. Now I see Chinese. I always see Chinese. But Tony has a question here about templates.
Yeah, so Tony's asking, do you have a template for molds for Chinese suppliers? Should I get the contract in Chinese?
You know, I think the contract in Chinese always helps because it's in their language.
Right.
But if you don't have a Chinese entity, it's going to be hard pressed for you to go and try to defend that to any situation. Now, you know, threatening or writing a cease and desist letter from a regional attorney in China is always helpful, and maybe it can work. But you know, if you're not really supported by something that has a Chinese entity under their law, you're kind of in this gray area that could wind you down a bad road. So. You know, I'd say is if you're working through somebody, you know, see if they have an entity over there that they can, your sourcing agent that you're using, somebody that, you know, they can use an NNN agreement, which is their confidentiality agreement, to wrap things up. And then, whenever you do business with a Chinese factory, you always want to make sure their stamp is applied. So I have them stamp it and sign it. Oftentimes there's moments where I've seen where a signature and stamp is both required. So we don't just require a stamp, we might require both. So
yeah.
Just doing those little things, I think, can also make them aware that you know a little bit more than normal.
And one other thing that we try to recommend when we're doing molds is that our logo is on the mold. So, something very, yeah. So, you know, we know it's our mold. Okay. Oh, let's see. Is there a mold problem in other countries?
Meaning like, can other countries kind of deal with the same thing? Like if a factory,
I think it's just a pissed off, factory owner that doesn't want to lose business.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the quality of the steel definitely matters in terms of country. So if you're going to be moving one to another and you've already used that one mold so many times, maybe it's not even worth moving the mold. You want to like check that out because certain amount of steel only has X amount of injections that it can take before starting to crack or having issues. And steel in India is definitely different from steel in China. So, you know, watching the material grade of what you're getting is also important. But yeah, I think what Norm said, it's not a question of quality. A lot of times it's a question of the guy being upset or woman being upset, right, in that case.
Okay, I think that's it. All right. So if you're interested in our giveaway today, hashtag Wheel of Kelsey, tag two people, you'll get a second entry. And now, Kels, let's go over to Viably. Facing cash flow challenges with your e-commerce business? Discover Viably, your ultimate financial ally. From real-time sales data integrations to immediate funding access, Viably is here to support you. Plan your growth with their free tool for online sellers and engage with specialists whenever you need. Extend your cash flow with Viably. All right, let's go to the wheel.
Okay, before that, we're going to try sharing the screen one last time. I think I figured out what was the
issue. All right, the shark.
If there's no audio, then I don't know what we could do, but this should work.
Oh. Hi, Sharks. My name is Steven Bluestein.
And I'm Sean Connect.
And we're the founders of Pride Bites Pet Products. We are seeking $200,000 for 10% of our company. If you're anything like us, your pet is a member of your family. And because of that, we believe that they should be spoiled in a way that is completely unique. So let me introduce you to Pride Bites. We allow you to design, customize, and buy anything you want for your furry friend, providing one-of-a-kind products for your one-of-a-kind pet.
So like Sadie here in our personalized collar, your dog can truly feel like man's best friend. Our process is incredibly simple. First, select from one of the high-quality products.
All right, so I just wanted to show a little clip.
Cool. Pretty cool. and you haven't aged a day.
Oh, thank you. Man, you're a good dermatologist.
Yeah. All right. So now we'll head over to the Wheel of Kelsey. Here we go.
It's time for the Wheel of Kelsey.
All righty. So thank you, everyone who entered today's Wheel of Kelsey. I'll shuffle these up.
Oh, cool.
And let's see who today's winner is.
Tony? It was. Yes.
So this is the Tony from YouTube. So if you could please email me, kate@lunchwithnorm.com. We'll connect you with the prize and congratulations.
All right. Congrats. All right, Stephen, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. This is a topic that I think is extremely important, especially nowadays. It'll be more important in the next few months. But yeah, I really appreciate you.
Want more great information? Don't forget to subscribe by clicking here. Also, if you want to check out our latest podcast, click over here. Lunch with the Lunch with the Lunch with the